Okay, looks like we can go ahead and get started here as a few people kind of roll in here for the morning session. So thanks for joining me over here across the street from the conference center for the morning. Just quick show of hands, how many people have already been by our booth and talked to me in the last couple of days? Okay, a few. All right, cool. I was hoping it wasn't every hand and I would feel like this is a waste of time. So I'm glad to see some people that haven't heard some of this stuff before. Did anyone attend Ignite in Atlanta a couple weeks ago in the US? Okay, good. Did anyone actually watch some of the sessions and see some of this content yet? All right, great. So this should be new content for everybody. My name's Jeff Schertz. I'm a Microsoft UC architect at Polycom. I've been a MVP for LCS, OCS, Link, Skype for Business, whatever it's called next time, for quite a number of years. Born and raised in Chicago. This is my third time here out in New Zealand. So what I'd like to do is spend about the next 60 minutes, and if there's questions, go ahead and I would say save them for the end, because a lot of times I get questions that's like, oh, that's the next slide. So go ahead and I'll make sure we leave some time at the end. And remind me to repeat the question back into the mic, because there's not a mic for the crowd. So that way the people listening to the stream and watching or listening to this later will be able to know what the answer or what the question is that I'm answering. So the three topics I wanted to touch on was quickly IP phones, not an exciting topic necessarily, but based on the conversations I've had and continue to have, there's definitely still a need out there for that. And I understand we talk about PSTN calling. That's not something that's available in this region yet for Microsoft's Office 365 platform. That's something that we have in North America and have had since last December, and I know it's pending here. So this will kind of give you guys an idea as you're looking at your own environments or customer environments that you think the PSTN calling and PSTN conferencing, which is already available, that's a good platform to move to. You want to know, what device choices do I have in terms of IP phones? So I'll spend a few minutes on that. I'll talk about meeting room solutions, equipping meeting rooms that don't have some sort of solution there today, something that you want to put in that works natively with your Skype for Business environment, if that's still Link Server on premises, if that's Skype that you've upgraded, or if it's an Office 365 tenancy. And then I'll spend a little bit of time talking about video interoperability. So from an IP phone standpoint, there's a lot of choices out there. If you take a look at the Skype for Business catalog, this is an ever-growing list of qualified supported devices. So these are things built by partners of Microsoft that go through rigorous testing to say they do these things and they do these things well. And that way, just as if you're going to buy a headset and you know that it's got that little sticker that says optimized or qualified, that you're going to get a good experience using it with your equipment, with your desktop, your laptop. So it's the same approach, and it's even more important for something like that that's an IP-managed device. So if you take a look within the last year or so, there's a new category that was added called Cloud IP phones. These are the traditional phones that have been supported with the platform, but these are the ones that are supported specifically with the PSTN calling and the Cloud PBX components for Office 365. So to start out, I'd be remiss if I didn't at least talk about Link Phone Edition. I mean, these are devices have been around quite a while, and I constantly get the question about, like, should I still be getting them? Are they still available? What's the story with these guys? They're still sold. There's still a couple out there. The thing is that if you're in a scenario where you haven't done any devices, any IP devices for you or your customers, now would not be a good time to say, hey, let's introduce these in a new environment. These are kind of the older devices. Environments that have a lot of these, there's no need to switch to another platform at the moment. We're still selling them, they're still supported, but there hasn't been a lot of development in this platform. So this is kind of the old way of doing it. Even if you look at the current firmware, which the last update's about a year old now, it's still called Link Phone Edition. Microsoft didn't go and update it to Skype Phone Edition. And that's really an indication of those aren't the Skype phones. Right? They're qualified to a point, they work. So the idea there is what works. So there's the old CX700 or the Nortel IP850 or 8540, the touchscreen phone that if anyone has ever paid attention to the original Iron Man movie, that phone's actually sitting on Tony Stark's desk. Not plugged in, not registered to that, because I don't think that OCS in the movie studio. But that phone's been around a while. That phone actually works. I have one at home that I've registered to my own O365 tenancy a few times. So if you run the latest software and you need to use some phones with Office 365, those will register. If you don't have PSTN calling, you can't call the PSTN numbers, but you can still make calls and register with that to other Link or other federated users. But really, there's just two devices that are supported by Microsoft. There's the old CX600, and then the original Avaya, now Mitel phone of that same category. You'll notice that the common area phones, like the CX500, is not on this list because there's no way to do PIN authentication. If you're aware, if you've ever had to do this in the past, PIN authentication uses a plethora of DHCP configuration settings that you can't do in someone's remote network or in someone's home to register to a cloud service. So I'll talk a little bit more about how to address that, but the main thing is the CX phones are out there, but they're not ideal and they're not focused on cloud PBX. What is the ideal approach is the phones that for the last number of years have been going against the Microsoft 3PIP program, third-party interoperability program. So that's, again, qualification supported specs that Microsoft has that says, okay, vendor XYZ, if you're gonna build a phone, it's gotta pass these specs and then we'll throw it up on the catalog. So these are devices that support on-premises and cloud registration. So I can register to my Link 2013 environment, I can register to my Skype for Business 2015 server or my Skype for Business online accounts that I've got in my 0365 tenancy. So these are the latest generation of phones. I've got a bunch out there on the floor. These give you more capabilities. There's some additional in-band options that you can manage through your tenancy. There's a couple commands I'll talk about to support that management. But the idea is just there's more options. There's not like one desktop phone. There's six or seven desktop phones. There's a conference phone that's available. A number of phones available via Polycom that are all qualified for cloud. So it's already there today. So as you guys get PSTN calling and it sort of makes sense to then have a desktop phone with buttons that you're actually going to dial and call someone with a phone number outside of your Link or your Skype world, that there's already a large list of devices that's ever growing. I mentioned earlier PIN authentication is not supported in the cloud, but Microsoft's been working on this modern authentication with some, which some of you may have heard of. This is a way to address how do I sign into a phone easily without sitting there and punching in an entire SIP URI and UPN and password? How do I do something quick and easy like what PINAuth provides, but not at the complexity that PINAuth has that's so focused on only working on a managed on-premises network environment? So you'll hear more about modern authentication, but that's the type of features that these phones are going to support when that feature is available through the Office platform. The other thing is that the reason the CX phones, the 500s, and the common phones don't work with Office 365 is because they don't. The PIN authentication is not supported. But what about the other authentication model? Just putting your user information in. On VVX phones, you can do that on the phone. You can do that through a web interface. You can do that through provisioning information through the new modern authentication method. But on a CX phone, unless you've got a USB port, you can't do the tethering to put your user information in the actual Link or Skype for Business client. So that's why those phones that don't have USB ports, the Link Edition or the Link Phone Edition devices, don't work. Where that's moot for the 3PIP phones, because USB ports are not used for authentication. That can be done through better together over Ethernet pairing and then all the different methodologies I just mentioned. So management of these devices, if we look back at the Link Phone Edition devices, they'll work. Like I mentioned, a couple of them will work and register, but you have to make sure you get the software updated to the latest version. That doesn't really help if you are a 365 tenant only and you don't have an on-premises server and you buy or have a phone that has older firmware. You're kind of stuck in this chicken egg scenario of, well, I need to get the software, but I can't get the software unless I register successfully to the environment to download the new software, but I can't do that if I don't have the new software. Right? And you'll never have an answer to that. So it's either I need to find an environment to register temporarily to, or you know, don't go that route, because the Link Phone Edition devices can only update software after they've registered. There's a long, convoluted process to do it pre-registration, but it's something you'd have to do in your own environment, and it's something that's not very commonly done. So the idea is that the 3PIP devices, like the VVX phones and the Trio, those you don't have to register those. You can just put one on the internet and just go download it from a hosted server. You can put a USB drive in the Trio and update the software immediately. So there's no requirement on a successful registration to get it to a version of software that's supported for the platform. So those are devices that are ideal for customers that don't have any management solution or anything on premises and are just cloud only. Inside the device update services in the cloud right now, Microsoft has the most recently qualified version of that software. So if you put a phone and register, after registration, it'll say, okay, here's my version, here's the version in the cloud, I'm gonna take that version, whether it's newer or older. So it may not be an upgrade, it could be a downgrade. So if you're testing new software, you get some beta software and load it, you go to lunch, you come back, and it's back where you started, and you're not sure what the heck happened, you swear you installed it, it rolled back. So there's some configuration options that if you wanna run a version differently than the currently qualified version, you need to disable that capability. I've got a link here to an article I wrote a little while ago that shows how to do that. So if you want to turn it off at a parameter level so that the phones ignore what's provided in the cloud. So that'd be more for testing, but the qualified version is what you would want to run on those phones. There's some configuration options available where you can set certain things like time and date format and the power saving settings for office hours. The main thing is it's a few settings. There's additional things you can do out of band through a traditional provisioning server the phones can be pointed to. And then there's also, if anyone's aware of a software platform called UC Commander that was written by a company, Event Zero in the US, Microsoft purchased the IP for that. So they've actually they plan on taking that software and embedding it into Office 365. So by the time you guys get PSTN calling down here, that might be something that's already in the platform. So it'd be more device-specific parameter configuration options that are built right into the Office 365 management portal. So let's jump quickly into the meeting rooms, right? So we talk a little bit about phones and desktop devices and conference phones, but what about more just getting out of the audio stack? You know, meeting room devices that provide content sharing and video and the rest of the collaborative components that the UC stack is known for. So there's a couple issues that have always been around. One of the issues is there's a lot of meeting rooms out there, but most of them aren't equipped with some devices. The percentages, I don't know where a lot of these numbers come from. Some of these slides are coming directly from slides that were presented in the US Ignite event. But whatever the number is, it's a disparaging amount. You go into any environment, and most meeting rooms are not equipped with equipment or video equipment. It's sort of, I'll bring something in the room. Some of the devices might be in there, might be USB only, and they need some other connectivity, but there's not a lot of defined endpoints where everything in the room is already there, and you just have to go in the room and join the meeting. So there's kind of a two-pronged attack to address this. One of it is, well, how do we address the rooms that don't have anything at a flexible and cost-efficient route? So one of the things that Microsoft's been talking about since they announced it at Enterprise Connect in the US last March, April, May timeframe was that the Project Rigel solution, which in the US Ignite event just a few weeks ago is now, if you've heard about that Project Rigel solution, that's now the next generation of Skype room systems. So really quickly, that's kind of a confusing name because we had Link Room System. Has anyone ever used or deployed a LRS or Link Room System in the past? So that's something we resold as a CX8000. Smart had a solution, Crestron had their solution. Those are appliance-based devices that were really Microsoft's first attempt at how do we put Link in a room? I think the partners and Microsoft learned a lot from that approach. One of the things we noticed is that it really helped address the simplicity of using video teleconferencing that people aren't using because they're not using it. Like they're not comfortable with it, they don't know how to use it, they don't know how to schedule it. So what LRS did really well was, hey, we're gonna use the Outlook methodology that's already there. I'm already booking the room, it's got an Outlook calendar. Now I can go in the room and I just touch a button, either on the screen itself or on a touch panel on the table. Where it kind of fell flat in a few places was it was still a complex solution that had a lot of parts, it was expensive, it was realistically more expensive than some traditional telepresence systems of the same capabilities, but had more expansion to them. So it was a good first attempt, but it was, you know, something like the Surface Hub where it's a large device that works well in some rooms, but it didn't scale down to the every room. So we were able to take a little bit of a hit out of that percentage, but it wasn't necessarily a home run. So what we're looking at with Skype room systems is this next generation, and to kind of clarify from before, Link room system is now called Skype room system. November of last year, there was an update that brought the new colors and the new iconography, so it looks more like the Skype for Business enterprise client. So that's Skype room system, and now we have new Skype room system. So they're all kind of this collection of video endpoints that the commonality is they're Windows-based OSs, Microsoft writes the software for them, but then third-party partners help build the hardware that surrounds it and then the devices that connect to it. So similar concept to like Link Phone Edition, where that software was written by Microsoft, and then hardware partners built different devices that looked a little bit different, but in essence, they did the same thing because the software was identical. So with the new Skype room systems, the idea is let's get into these rooms. They may already have projectors or displays in them. They probably already have a phone in them. It could be an analog phone, it could be an IP phone, but they don't have video. And then the only thing the projector or the display is being used for is someone has their device there and they're hooking up through some mess of HDMI or DisplayPort cables and connectors to show content up on the screen. But then if they do a meeting, then they're not necessarily using that. But it's sort of this piecemeal approach of I can do four different things in the room, but I have to do four different things to do that. So the idea there is that with the Skype room systems is we're going to extend that same Skype for Business experience. So I shouldn't be in that room unless I booked it, right? So I've put it on the calendar, I go in the room. Because I made it a Skype for Business meeting, the data is in the invitation to join. So it's that one-touch join approach. So just like LRS did and does still, just like I can do from a desktop or a mobile client, is I'm not dialing a number, going to an IVR, dialing another number, and hoping that I dialed all that right. It's literally just going, is this my meeting? No. Okay, am I in the wrong room? Why is my meeting not there? It is my meeting, great, I hit join, and I'm in it. And it's gonna connect with audio and video. And if the meeting's already running and content sharing's already going, you're gonna see all that stuff pop right up. From the first one in the meeting, I can see the participant list build, I can kick people out. Basically anything that I would do for my own Skype for Business desktop, manage PowerPoint content, do participant mute or unmute all, those capabilities are right there built into the device, into Skype room system. And then because it's running on Skype, for Business, then if it's an enterprise voice enabled account, I have PSTN dialing capabilities. You know, content sharing is done through a couple different ways. The HDMI cable on the table that's plugged in this device, I plug in and I share, and that goes out to the meeting. Or what's common is I'm in the room, I have my Surface, I join the meeting, not over audio or video, because we don't need that going on twice in the room, but I join the meeting and now I can share my content and I'm controlling it on my device. And everyone in the room sees it, everyone remotely sees it as well. And then the big thing is this commonality, and I can show you more at our booth across the street in terms of how this pans out to all sorts of devices, not just these, but this commonality of having a roughly 10-inch touch panel device on the table. So as users go into a room, if it's different platforms, but they're all supported platforms, they've got a similar UI that matches this UI, so it doesn't require users to have to understand how to use it. It's, oh, this is the same thing I do on my desktop. I know how to use Skype for Business. I know how to use that. It's easy for me. From an administration standpoint, it's a Windows 10 device. So manage it through the same ways. Windows Update be used for delivery of updates. Microsoft talked about at Ignite in US about using platforms like Intune to manage these devices. And the idea there is it's easy to deploy, easy to manage, and then for users, it's simple. There's no signing in with their accounts. It's just already signed in with the account of the room, and you're ready to go. And when you look at the interface on the device, I've got very few options. It's join a meeting, start a meeting right now, call someone, just show the content locally. We're not going to do a meeting, but the people in the room want to see the content. I'm not doing any remote connectivity. So the same type of stuff you could do, but without having to bring a device in. And then what this dock does is it allows the system to be. And it's not really a dock. That's the term that's been using. But to me, a dock is something you would dock and undock. It's a fixed device. So it's literally a Surface Pro 4 running the Microsoft software that they're designing for this platform. So it keeps the thing on the table so it doesn't get legs and walk away. And it's connected to USB devices, audio and video devices. So the thing to think about is this is perfect for the huddle room and the small room where you're going to put everything on the desk and maybe put a monitor nearby. And then as you need to go into rooms where you need to put a camera 30 feet away or you need to do more of the traditional AV integration to customize, then that's where you move on to additional solutions. So again, this isn't a one-size-fits-all. The Surface Hub doesn't go in every room. Skype room system doesn't go in every room. The more rooms you have, the more different configurations, the more technical limitations that you may have, the more different use cases, engineering meetings, sales meetings, technical meetings, executive meetings. There's different things about those meetings that are more important. Video might be more important. Content might be more important. And the content might be motion versus sharpness, looking at engineering diagrams or reviewing a video. So the benefit is that there's just more and more options now to help equip rooms to get you the experience you need, but not at the limitation of, well, we have five different platforms and all my users are confused. The users just see the interface and it all works off of Outlook Meeting, shares content, desktop sharing. It's the same protocols, SVC and C3P and VBSS and RDP, and it's a whole alphabet soup, but they all support those protocols. So this platform is going to be launched the early next year in North America, and then outside the U.S. after that. We don't yet have timelines on if it's going to be everywhere globally or different regions over time. We'll know more about that towards the end of the year. Into the first half of the year, as the product matures, Microsoft talked about some potential roadmap items. So these aren't things that are definitely going to happen. They talked more, and again, this is information from the Ignite sessions in Atlanta. They talked more about things that could happen. The first thing, as I mentioned, content sharing is HDMI only. There isn't a wireless Miracast approach yet, but it's a Surface Pro 4 running Windows 10. The hardware and the software supports that. So most of it's about just taking those capabilities and unlocking them in the software that's wrapped around this, allowing that capability. So it's not a lot of development, I would think, to do that because the technology is already in there. Same thing with, this would be a single monitor type solution. So small room, single HDMI connection. It could potentially span out to multiple multiple monitors, which again, Windows 10 supports multiple monitors. If there's multiple HDMI ports on the platform or a way to span that out, which you can do with even the standard port replicator or hub or dock for the Surface Pro, then that's in there. Another thing they talked about was potentially customizing the user interface. Because at least at launch, this is going to be a, just like Link Phone Edition, you can't mess with any of it. So whether it's the Polycom or the Crestron or the Logitech, whoever builds that dock, it's going to be identical software. But they do talk, they did talk about maybe some potential UI customization that might be something like limiting a feature that you don't want your users to have, or maybe just branding, putting your own company logo on the back or whatever. There's no details on that yet. But the idea here is this isn't just to build it and be done with it. This is something where Microsoft, just like the Hub, will have additional releases that add more features to that platform. So the idea there is that this is something that is helping address the lower price range, quickly get in a room. You're not running cables through ceilings or floors or walls. It's putting stuff nearby that you can easily plug in that users can just walk in and join the meeting. So again, it's not something that if you start going, well, I need to hook up another camera, or what the first question I get is, how long can I extend that USB cable, right? Can I use a fiber connection repeater and or converter? And sure, you might. It's not something that probably would be supported. The idea is that these are meant for a certain thing, and that thing is that kind of gap that's been there for a while. The high end to middle range has been covered, and then the low end range is covered with a lot of systems. But what I've talked to a lot of people the last couple of years is they're like, I got one of your cameras and one of your video system or one of your mics or speakers, and I've got my own Surface Pro, my own desktop, or everyone's like, I'm just building my own room system. But I've got to manage it through group policy, and I always have a user that signs out once a day, and the next person goes in, it doesn't work. So it's something that nobody wants to deal with the management. Like, I just want to buy a thing, put it in there, the room works, and worst case scenario, I have to reboot it once in a while, maybe. But it's not something where it needs care and feeding every day. And that has to do with having a system in there, just like the original Link Room system that works that way. So what about the rest of the rooms? The smaller percentage of ones that may already have equipment in there. And these are systems that could have, or these are rooms that could have systems from a variety of different platforms. So Polycom, Cisco, older Tandberg, Lifesize, these could be older systems equipped with ISDN capabilities for video. These could be fully immersive Cisco CTS or Polycom immersive or older RPX, full rooms, multiple codecs. All of these different platforms are all based on standards-based video. So H323 and OpenSIP platforms, where they all talk to each other. It's not like only the Cisco can talk to the Cisco, the Polycom can talk to all of those. But even though most of those support SIP, if you go really far back, it might only support H323, but most of those support SIP. Microsoft works on SIP as well. And if you go back to one of my sessions at, I think, Link Conference, the original one in 2013, I went into all the details about H264 versus 264 SVC versus X-Dash, H.264UC, and they're all not identical. They look similar, but they're not the same. So the same thing with the Microsoft platform. It's based on SIP, but it's unique. And that's what gives it the unique capabilities, but you can't just take something that speaks standard SIP, like an old Logitech endpoint or a Cisco room system, and have it register to the Microsoft platform. So that's something a few systems out there, like the Polycom Group system, can do that, but that's because it's baked in there specifically. So clearly you can't just rip and replace all of the systems out there with the latest thing. Put in a Skype room system, put in an LRS, put in a group series. You can't go native that way all the time. That could be your target goal, but that could take months or years because you can't just rip and replace. You might be able to replace 8 systems, but 80 or 800 over time, that takes a long time. So what do we do with these video teleconferencing rooms that are in place that all share a platform, but they don't have direct connectivity to the Link or Skype for Business world? And a lot of, I mean, they could be 3 days old. It could be something that was just purchased. They do 1080p 60 video, they support content, multiple cameras with really great optics. They're not old systems, it's just using traditional protocols. So the idea there is that, how do you deal with those limitations? And what provides interconnectivity? There's a lot of different methods that have been available for years. Going back to early OCS days, there's ways to do it. But most of it was all about, let's take a third-party bridge, and I'm gonna jump around here for a second, but let's take a third-party bridge and put everybody on that bridge. So you've got Link and Skype and OCS users making SIP calls to SIP URIs that go out of the platform, and then what should be a meeting to them is actually a peer call that doesn't have a participant list, that doesn't have all those options. They're just making a peer call to another bridge platform, and instead of getting the gallery view and the participant list and the IM conversation, on the right side, they're just getting like, oh, I'm getting different video, but that's all, that layout's being built for me by some MCU. It's all traditional 264 AVC decoding, recoding. So that part's good, but where's the rest of my stuff? Where's my participant list, how I mute people? I'm not really in a meeting because they're not connected to the AVMCU and the ASMCU that run this platform in the Link and Skype for Business world. So a number of years ago, this Real Connect approach was created by Polycom to say, well, let's use both bridges simultaneously. So let's leave all of the Link and Skype users on their side. So they join a Skype meeting through an invitation, they go to a Skype meeting, they do a Skype meeting the whole way. But let's allow the systems that don't have that capability to join in. So what's going to happen is that now we don't have different meeting invitations, we don't have different join approaches, we don't have different people being seen, limitations on content sharing and all that. It's basically everybody on the Skype side sees that experience on the left side. So what this experience is it's all based on using the Skype for Business workflow. So Outlook, create a meeting. Everybody that's Link or Skype for Business has clicked join, because obviously these people aren't dialing numbers anymore. At least they shouldn't be. I still see some people use the conference number to dial into a Skype meeting from their own PC instead of just hitting the button. So the idea is, even if you give it to them, sometimes there is a little bit of training, but the idea is that that's not a requirement, right? It's about breaking those old habits and letting people use the platform as it's designed. So what Real Connect can do then is say, if we've got a modern VTC, so most Cisco endpoints, the last couple generations of Polycom systems, these devices all support calendar integration natively with Exchange. The methodologies that they use are different. The way the Polycom endpoints work is they're EWS clients. So they actually will look for an Exchange server and pull their mailbox and pull the mail back. The way the Cisco endpoints work is they're actually pushed email traditionally through something called TMS, which is the Cisco infrastructure component that it goes and looks at mailboxes in Exchange, and then when there's mail there, it pushes it to the endpoint. So that's something that we can emulate both. So the Real Connect platform will say, okay, you guys, you're gonna get your email through me, you guys, I'm gonna push the email to you. But regardless of how that's happening, I go in the room and the invitation's there because the endpoint was able to gather that. So I can go to a Cisco touch panel and hit join. I can pick up a remote on a Polycom system or touch the actual screen on touch panel systems and just join. For endpoints that don't support calendaring, like the older Tanberg systems and some of the LifeSize systems, then I still need a way to join. So it's still gonna have that dial approach. I have to dial a number, but that information is in the invitation. It's in the Skype meeting. So users
can just say, look, I'm going to pick up my phone, here's the meeting, go in the room and hit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they'll be connected into that meeting. So everything that joins from the link and Skype side is going to a link or Skype for Business MCU on premises, in the cloud, wherever that is. Everyone joining from a standards-based video system is joining to the Polycom MCU, and they're getting a traditional standards-based experience, but everyone can be seen and heard, and it doesn't matter who shares content and what method, it's gonna show up for everyone in the call in either direction. So this is something that's been available for a couple of years, but this is what is coming to natively to Office 365 next year. So just quickly to point out what's happening here is that the Microsoft MCU in the cloud is still controlling this. It's still kind of the architect of where everything's connecting. And if you guys have ever done a video call since the Link 2013 days, it's 5 concurrent video streams is what you're gonna see, up to 5 active speakers. So that same kind of thing is there, but what's gonna happen is now those 5 people aren't just Skype for Business clients or desktops or mobile. It could be any standards-based endpoint. So we could have Polycom, Cisco, Lifesize, et cetera, 323 and SIP in these calls, and whoever the active speakers are, they take their rightful place in the gallery view. There's no priority over one or the other. So the key is if I'm a user and I join a meeting, I have no idea any of the stuff's happening. I don't understand anything that I just said for the last 20 minutes as a user because it's irrelevant. I see the people, I get going on with the meeting, and the technology is really moot. So this Real Connect service for Office 365, this is us taking the Real Connect platform and putting it in Azure, and it's being connected directly to Office 365. So this is something that's co-development with Microsoft. Has anyone heard of VIZ, the Video Interoperability Service? So I heard a couple chuckles in the back. So that's something that I actually talked at length in the first Ignite conference in Chicago a year and a half ago. That was really the first attempt at some sort of native video interoperability solution in the Skype for Business 2015 server release. It was very limited in terms of the capabilities. There's no content sharing, there was no encryption, it's one-way calling, it only works with certain Cisco endpoints that must be registered to call manager, only on-premises endpoints. It was literally the first attempt at that. If development continued on that platform, it could have grown to other additional pieces, but I haven't seen any of that happen. The other thing is that was only for on-premises deployments. It wasn't something that was scalable or applicable to Office 365. So what Microsoft has done is partnered with Polycom to say, let's bring this service that already exists, that already does all the things that VIZ can't do, and then put that directly in the cloud for customers. So the idea is that if they've got an Office 365 environment, and they've got a few room systems. Could be I got 5 Lifesize systems, or I got 10 old Polycom systems, or I've got 2 Cisco and 10, whatever the mixture is, it doesn't matter, they're standards based. They can get away from that, I have 2 meeting solutions. I go into a conference room at a customer, and they're in there doing a Skype meeting with their Surface, and there's a 4-month-old Cisco endpoint right behind them with a 10X optical camera or whatever. And they're just like, yeah, I wish I could use that for the meeting, that'd be great, but I don't. IT's the only guys that know how to use that. That's usually what happens. It's like they can figure it out, but the regular users, not happening. So this is something where we can take that simple approach, join those systems in, using infrastructure, all in the cloud. A couple things there is when you solve this for a single environment, you can cherry pick what you want. But when you're doing it at a multi-tenancy level, you need to have some sort of lowest common denominator of like, what's the base experience everyone's gonna get? And then we can allow features above that, but we can't just go to the top because other people are gonna say, well, I don't have those type of systems and now I'm left out. So it's supporting click to join through modern VTCs to simplify the process so I'm not dialing a number, I'm pushing a button or tapping a button on a control panel that's doing that dial for me. Because we still have to do H323 dialing and SIP dialing on these platforms, but if we hide it from the users, it simplifies everything. And the second thing is if you don't have click to join, there'll be 2 options for joining. One will be just putting in some string, some SIP or 323 string that goes directly into the meeting. There'll be long strings, and I'll show that in a second. Another option is just to do the traditional IVR approach. That's not something Real Connect has done in the past, but that's something that's familiar for users, especially ones that don't have video conferencing or they don't know how the Lifesize systems work because they've never used them, but then when they're told, hey, you can use them to join your Skype for Business meetings now, all you have to do is go in the room. dial a number and you'll get an IVR and they'll say put in a conference ID. And that information's there in the invitation. A couple other things is, who here knows what VBSS is? Anyone? So video-based screen sharing. Another thing, if you really want to know, I've written a couple articles on it. Basically, what Microsoft's doing and has done is moving away from RDP as the primary way to share your desktop. The Skype for Business 2016 Windows clients, Skype for Business Server, and Skype for Business Online all support that. So if you have a 2015 server environment and you have at least cumulative update 3 or the July or June cumulative update from this year, or you're already an Office 365 tenant and you've got Office 2016, so the 16.x clients, not the 15.x, the 2013 Link clients that are reskinned, you'll have this VBSS capability by default. What it means is when I share my desktop, not program share, not PowerPoint, not whiteboarding, just literally go share desktop, if the other person on a peer call is a 2016 client or I'm connected to a meeting that has all 2016 clients, I'll use this VBSS by default. If there's any legacy clients, if it's, you know, it, Paul, if you want to request control and I accept it, there's all these scenarios where it falls back to RDP. So VBSS is in the platform. It's just going to take a little while before it's ubiquitously used in all of these meetings. But what VBSS is literally the same video codec as video. It's the X.264UC video codec, but we're using it for video sharing content. So when I share my desktop, it's being streamed using that same protocol. So that allows a couple things. One, the ability to use a higher frame rate, because RDP doesn't really have a frame rate. It's sort of slowish, I think would be the technical term. VBSS, even though that protocol supports up to 30 frames per second, in the documentation, Microsoft is supporting 15 frames a second for content, which is a big, big jump. So the second thing that helps address is that when you're sharing content between standards-based video systems back and forth, standards-based video content, whether it's H.323 calls or SIP calls, it's using something called H.239 or binary floor control protocol. These are common standards-based video conferencing content sharing protocols that are video-based. They've always done high frame rate. In fact, today you can do 1080p at 60 frames on these. So the idea is we're getting away from this apples and oranges to get, you know, closer to the same type of fruit, so that as we're bringing the content back and forth, there isn't a big loss as you go from one side to the other. So this is something that's not available in any platform yet, but it will be something that will be sort of a cloud-first capability based on the timeline of building this and engineering it. So I'll talk a little bit more about the licensing and how this works and the use cases, but the main thing is that this is still just the Real Connect approach. Real Connect means I send an invitation, people go to the periphery, and they come meet in the middle. They go to their devices, they go to their desks, they go to their rooms, and they go to the meeting. It's not a, how do I make a call from a Skype client to a room, or how do I get a life-size room to call my Skype client? Because those, while they're still sort of, I wouldn't say popular, it's still some things people ask for, the biggest successes we've seen is getting away from that use case, because you have to manage registration, you have to manage presence, you have to manage directories, which are the biggie. There's always, I got multiple directories, they're out of sync, how do I know how to find it? And then the end result is you're calling a room that you hope someone's in the room to answer it, instead of just saying, here's the meeting, everyone go to the room that they've scheduled, and if they haven't, just forward it to that room. Walk in there and it's there. Worst case scenario, go to the room and dial the number because I have the invitation on my phone, but it's just going to the meeting. And that's the same way Skype Room System is built, the same way LRS and Surface Hub is built. It's just schedule a meeting, click to join, and you simplify the technical side. So the workflow from a setting this up for an administrative portal, and this is something that's, again, focused for the beginning of the year launch in North America. We don't have timelines yet on when it'll be outside America, but the key here is where Skype Room System is about building things and getting them in boxes and shipping them and getting them on catalog lists. This is about building a multi-tenancy solution starting in the North American Azure and O365 data centers, and then repeating that cookie cutter throughout the world. So what regions first, how quickly can that be done? So that information will be available more towards the end of the year. It could be something that mimics what PSTN calling has been doing, but I think the biggest holdup on PSTN calling is the fact that there's just the the different governments and regions and the issues related to telephony connectivity, where this wouldn't necessarily be a limitation here. This is just technically everything. Mic's cutting out there. Technically getting everything working. So we'll know more, and this information will come out, you know, through Microsoft and through Polycom as we say, here's where it's coming, here's where it's coming next. So with that, the way it's going to work is that there'll be it'll be sold through the traditional Polycom partner method. What you'll do is you'll basically buy licenses. So you'll go into it, to the Office 365 portal, download an application, put that information in, like a key, and then what that'll do is give you licenses. And then those licenses will show up in your portal. So if you go to your O365 portal and you say, I've got 100 Cloud PBX licenses and 50 PSTN conferencing licenses, you'll see, hey, I just bought 50 cloud video interoperability licenses. They'll be right there just like everything else. As an administrator, what you do is then you license users. So the way this works is it's based on meeting organizer. So if you're gonna look at the self-service model that's typically used with Skype for Business of I got 1,000 users, all of these 1,000 users can schedule their own meetings, anybody can join anyone's meeting, I want the capabilities for my 10 life-size systems to join, or my couple Cisco and Polycom systems to join, regardless of who schedules the meeting, then it's kind of a one for one. So every one of your 1,000 E3 or E5 users would get this extra license and then everyone's covered. If you're looking at more of a white glove approach where I say, I have thousands of users and hundreds of room systems, but we only use these for these certain meetings and I have 10 people, 10 administrators that schedule these meetings and send them out, then only those 10 users would need the license. So it's more of the more self-service, then the more you need to make it a one for one. So you schedule, or you go into the portal and you assign those licenses to users, and what happens is now those users, their invitations have the information that you need to join, and when someone tries to join their meeting from a traditional VTC, it'll work. So if I go into a room and I dial a number, I hit a button to join the meeting, as long as the meeting I'm joining was sent by someone who has that license applied to their account, it'll work. If they don't, I can't join. So pretty straightforward. Here's a couple of screenshots that these are mock-ups. This isn't exactly what it'll look like, but the premise is that I go into my portal, I search for this app, and that's where I put my licenses in. And then once I get them assigned over, now I see them next to where everything should be. Here's a mock-up of what the invitation may look like. If anyone's familiar with Real Connect as it's been for the last couple of years, there typically isn't additional information. The way that it works is the conference ID that Link or Skype generates for the PSTN dial-in, that same exact conference ID is used for VTCs. So I go to a life-size endpoint or a Cisco endpoint, and I would dial, in this scenario, 531-3858. And then that call would trigger the Real Connect cascading to bring the meeting together. In a multi-tenancy environment like Office 365, it's not that straightforward. So what'll happen is the conference ID here, well, there's two things. One, the conference ID will be different. Two, what if there isn't a conference ID? What if you want to provide a solution where all of your internal meetings can do Skype and room systems, but you don't have PSTN conferencing, or you're not using the AC partner approach? So what'll happen in the cloud delivery of this solution is that the conference ID for voice will be just for PSTN, and there'll be a new section at the bottom that's just for video joining. So there'll be a new different conference ID for meetings there. So it'll be clear to users that, hey, if I'm joining from a phone, I dial this. If I'm joining from a VTC, I dial this. Exactly how it's gonna look is not all fleshed out yet, but the approach is that, again, there's that lowest common denominator. It'll be potentially dial an IVR and then put in the conference ID, and it'll be the video conference ID, not the one above it. Or it might be just dial this string and go directly to the meeting. One of the things you'll notice there is that the example SIPURI is pretty long. If we look at the 4321 component, that could represent like a tenancy ID. And then the 1 through 8 digits would represent the meeting ID. So obviously in a large multi-tenancy environment, the numbers are gonna be quite long, longer than what you'd have in your own deployment. Because we need a number to identify each individual tenant from every other Office 365 tenant out there. And then the rest of that number identifies that user's individual meeting. So you'll see more of that, but if anyone's using Office 365 versus what they've done with their on-premises, they'll see even in regular meetings, the behavior of these numbers is different. In the normal on-premises deployment, the default is every time I create a meeting, my conference ID is the same, unless I go into Outlook and I change the options to give myself a new number every time. But the way it works is that hidden behind this join Skype meeting link at the top is a focus ID. That focus ID and the conference ID are paired. They're, when one changes, they both change. In the Office 360, the Office 365 world for Skype for Business Online, that behavior is totally different. And a lot of that has to do, actually all of it has to do with the fact that this is a massive multi-tenancy environment, so it's a bit more complex. But again, hiding that so users don't have to deal with it is the ultimate goal. So if we take a look at the kind of the meeting flow, if we take look at just, we've got two room systems that want to join a Skype for meeting or Skype for Business meeting that's already running. What does it look like? So I go in the first conference room, I either hit calendar join, I dial a SIP URI, I do the IVR, whatever method, and I connect into my room system is making a call into the RealConnect platform in Azure. At this point, we go, okay, this guy's trying to join a Skype for Business meeting. Where is this? So we do this meeting discovery process where we go look at Office 365 and we find that meeting. And then we create a cascade to it. So now anybody else that connects to the RealConnect side, to the traditional MCU side that's running in the cloud, we know where that meeting is. So if other people join, like the next room, we already know where that meeting's running. We can send them there directly. Now, in a traditional on-premises environment, those rooms are joining the same exact meeting on the same exact MCU. So once one person joins, the cascade's done. Everyone else just comes in and joins the party. In a multi-tenancy environment like this, it's potentially will be global, the idea there is that might not be that simple. So let's take a look at North America as an example. And let's say there's three data centers, East, West, and Central. And they've got Azure, Office 365, all the components in it. And a bunch of different rooms join this meeting. So they're going to be directed via GeoDNS to the local data center so they keep the media paths short as possible. Let's say, I doubt the US West data center is going to go offline, so let's just say we lose connectivity to that for some reason. So the US West room drops off the call. They dial back in. At this point, they're going to be redirected to another data center. Now, if I back up a step, in this scenario, we've got three rooms connecting to three different MCUs in the cloud that are all going back to the same meeting. The thing to understand about how Link and Skype works, and this is the same from a standard edition server all the way to the O365 world, is that when someone schedules a meeting, their meeting is running in one place. The meeting isn't cascaded across MCUs in the Microsoft world, so everybody has to come back to some location somewhere. With the way that the traditional MCUs work is those can be all brought into the same place. So in here, we've got three different traditional MCUs connecting, but they're all cascading back to one AV MCU, one Skype for Business MCU that's really controlling the whole meeting. So this gives us flexibility that's not traditionally available in a multi-tenancy environment. And again, all hidden from administrators and from users. It works until it doesn't work, and then you recall back in, and then you're connected again, and you don't necessarily know that this is happening. So just a couple quick things. This isn't magic, right? If you've got traditional video systems, you probably already have some sort of call control platform on site. It might be Cisco VCS, they might be registered to Call Manager, they might be registered to something like Polycom DMA or even older platforms. You don't just throw all this out the window. Really what you're doing is losing the MCUs in this scenario. You don't need to manage the workhorses of the platform, the things that cost the most to purchase and to manage and maintain. So if you still have a call control platform, you wouldn't want to ditch that because you still may need to deal with how do I get the calls up to the services in Azure? And then more importantly, how do I get the media there? If you just take a standards-based video system and drop it on any network in the world and try to make a call out to anything, whether it's something like a BlueJeans hosted service, it's still a standards-based video system. It's not like my Skype client that I can pretty much go anywhere and make a video call because of the way Icedun in turn works on those clients. It's a little bit more complicated. You get into things like H460 firewall traversal in the standard world. So the signaling components and the media traversal components are still, I wouldn't say critical, but they could be. It all depends on what the firewalls in these environments look like. So it's not a scrap everything and just keep the endpoints, but in an environment that maybe only has a few endpoints that have never called outside into the internet, have all called locally, then the idea there is that there's capabilities to do that. So we'll see more of this as this is built, but the idea there is it's not From the standards-based side, it's not throw everything out the window. But from the Skype for Business side, it pretty much is. There's no need to have any Link or Skype front-end or Edge or any on-premises services. It's just clients on-prem connected to cloud services, and then we'll take care of the video side. Something I didn't really point out, but actually let me go back to it because it's worth pointing out. Anyone familiar with Real Connect today, I mentioned that the conference ID is already there. You can use the Link or Skype for Business footer that's in the control panel to put additional details below the footer line to say, hey, this is just some text to tell you if you want to join from an external endpoint because somebody sent you this meeting and you know what to do with it, or you have a Cisco endpoint, do this stuff. But it's not code, it's literally just flat text. Here for the office service, what we're going to see is that, I don't know if you guys can tell, but the dotted line is at the bottom. This data is actually in the invitation. This is created by the plugin. So what's happening is there's a handful of customers in the US right now that are on a preview program for this, and what they have is special bits of the Skype for Business client, because that code is in the plugin in Outlook. So by the time this all comes to market, what you're gonna see is there'll be updates to the Office platform, to Skype for Business, that's gonna include this code. So this is all in the Microsoft software. This isn't a separate plugin from Polycom or anything like that. So that way, if I've got the latest X.Y version of the Skype for Business client, and I'm an O365 tenant, and someone has gone and assigned me a license, the next time I schedule a meeting, all of a sudden I'm gonna have that additional data there at the bottom of the email that shows the receiver of the message how to join from a traditional VTC, and then that system can join through the cloud service. So I've got a couple minutes here before the top of the hour. Do you guys have any questions on anything I covered or anything I didn't even address at all? Go ahead. Okay, so I'm gonna repeat the questions for the stream. So the question you're asking me is basically, what if you don't want everything all cloud? You wanna keep the whole traditional video, including the MCUs on premises, but your users in Office 365. Oh, so the inverse. So a hosted Real Connect solution, but you still have Skype or Link on premises. Yeah, that's something that Polycom supported for the last year now. It's a service provider model that a service provider, not O365, but other service providers out there in the world, they can host the video services and they can cascade down to your own managed Skype for Business platform. Any other questions? Okay, so if anybody has any specific one-off questions or anything that they want to mention, I'll be back across the street in the hub in a bit. But otherwise, thank you for coming this morning.